As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Why Always Us. It's your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Bruni. I am joined by Sam Lee.
Hiya.
And Paul Bayous.
Hello.
You can read everything on City and more on The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/mancitypod and sign up. That's theathletic.com/mancitypod. And at the end of this week's show as well, we'll have a taste of The Athletic's new documentary series, Away From Home. So stick around for that. But first, we're going to be talking on today's episode basically about the Fulham game, but how City went on to win the Fulham game. I want to talk about basically winning with 10 men. So let's begin with the foul that reduced City to 10 men. This is what Pep Guardiola had to say about it after the game.
I think it's the last man. It's soft contact or not soft contact, cannot be contact. His fault is a red card. So I said many times to the players, not Joao, many times. When he has 85 minutes, 87 minutes out of the 80-yard box, make a fault. But you have 65 minutes left, score a goal. 1-1, okay. You have 65 minutes with 11 against 11. At the end, penalty, 1-1 and 10 against 11. It's too much. Hopefully we can learn. So it happened because football is happened, because we lose the duel with the striker, the good movement for the winger, cutting inside, and it's happened, it's football. So, okay, rely on Eddie. Eddie can save it. So, today was a risky, we play against Fulham, 65 minutes, 10 against 11. Normally, you don't win. But we won because my players are beyond, are exceptional in all departments.
So that's what Guardiola had to say on the red card. And you can kind of see it, can't you, Sam? As soon as Cancelo did it, I said from my seat, like, he'll be lucky to stay on it.
As soon as they gave the pen, it was like, oh, yeah, well, he's off as well then, I guess. In fact, am I kind of re-refereeing that in my head? Because obviously they got rid of the double punishment, but yeah. They obviously then decided that he made no attempt to play the ball. I'm a bit of a weird one. You know, I'm a bit Graeme Souness in I like contact. And I didn't think that was a pen, and I didn't think the Alexander-Arnold one was a pen either. To answer the question that I was asked on like the Q&A, was it a red card? I was like, well, once they decided it was a penalty, then yes, it was going to be a red card because it was no attempt to play the ball, et cetera, but yeah, also I know it's ridiculous because on another day, talk about inconsistency from refs, it's probably inconsistency from me because on another day, if somebody had done that, I'd be like, well, that's a pen, isn't it? the fact that, it wasn't that controversial a decision in the end, was it? Like the City pen, which obviously we'll get to, which I think De Bruyne completely bought. He knew if he put his body in that position, he'd get clipped, and then he got clipped and he went down. Like that's just good. That's clever play. And, you know, if people listen to this and think, oh, he's a City reporter, would say that. Honestly, if any player did that, I'd be like, fair enough. I don't know. Both penalties were pretty much accepted, weren't they? But obviously there was a lot of controversy online, which kind of sums up where we're at today.
Yeah. The thing with it all, Paul, and obviously the position City were in, it was 1-0 at the time. Guardiola said it there, you know, Edison might save the one-on-one anyway, but even if he doesn't, you'd rather have 1-1 with 11 men than 1-1 with 10 men. So you can kind of see exactly what Guardiola's getting at. And the flip side of that as well is kind of this attitude of it's only Fulham, because I'm not having that either. Because Fulham, I mean, first off, I think Fulham have been great this season. I thought they played pretty well on Saturday as well. And it just ended up culminating in an impressive win with 10 men, didn't it?
Yeah. I think that it was more kind of credit to City than just playing Fulham, because I think that Fulham did their game. I also think that Marco Silva was quite honest in the press conference, saying that maybe they could have been a bit braver with the ball. But, I mean, that's not easy when you play at the Etihad against Man City, against Pep Guardiola Man City. Against a team that
he said, didn't he? He said the average of goals was more than four goals in the game. So he knew that, you know, they could get battered.
Exactly. So I guess that there is like a fear factor now, facing not just City, but Pep City, with the record that they have. I think that it translates as well with the stands. I think that the mood in the stadium was not like just getting nervous or anxious with the team. It was like just supporting the team because basically the crowd knew that it could happen. They felt that the players were in a mood that a goal could eventually come. So, yeah, basically I think that assuming or just giving Fulham kind of the benefit of they did a good game, but City just like deserved it and they were like outstanding. I think that there was no player at Man City that had a bad game. Maybe we can agree with Jack Grealish didn't have the best of the game, Jock and Cancelo, of course, but the rest of them were absolutely outstanding, just off the charts.
Yeah. We were raving about them during the game because obviously me and Paul sat next to each other. Yeah. And even, you know, before the equaliser, we were saying like how good they've been.
Unbelievable.
I wrote an article. To be fair, the headline, I hadn't thought about it in the way the headline was put, but the headline was like, this is one of City's greatest ever performances. And I'm still not sure if I'll put it in that category because that's, you know, seems a bit much. But in terms of the individuals, I mean, maybe I can't complain too much at the same time. Normally, you know, as a writer, you get a headline that's not what you think and it's annoying. But I hadn't really thought of it like that. I'm not sure I'd say that. But also, I can't really dispute it because I was so full of praise for the individuals and the circumstances and all that. They probably can't argue too much. Honestly, I can't speak enough about how impressed with them I am. And how many times have we come on podcasts like this after they've, you know, beaten Liverpool at Anfield 4-1 the other year and, you know, beat United 6-3 the other week. And they have so many good games, and when they batter teams and they're really good. And even the games when, you know, they draw or something, I thought, oh, they actually did quite well. But I mean, I'm rarely as enthusiastic as I was at the weekend about them. They were just, honestly, just so good. And people who didn't see the game might be thinking, like, what's this guy on about? And they squeezed past Fulham and blah, blah, blah. But honestly, though, as I guess anyone who saw the game realises, they were so good.
I just want to kind of, in what one of the things that impressed me the most is it's the momentum in the game, Paul, because first off, you've gone a goal up and you've then had a goal disallowed at 1-0. And suddenly you then down the other end immediately from the free kick from that, and it goes to 1-1 and you lose a man. And then after that, you score the winner. It's then VAR'd off for offside, correctly so, but like you still have that swing in emotions. And then you still keep going to get yourself that penalty in the 95th minute that wins it.
Yeah. Kind of like all a scenario was set for City just to let it go, basically. I mean, a lot of like a roller coaster of emotions that at some other stages of Pep City, probably this team wouldn't have made it. I'm pretty sure about that. And I think that Guardiola praised as well in the press conference the attitude, like from Bernardo and Gundogan and Rodri, from being like, I think that he didn't use that word, but he was trying to find the words in English that he meant in Spanish, and I felt that I could see the word that he wanted to use in Spanish. That was a bit of mala hostia. That is like being a bit of, not a bastard, but like being mean when you need to be mean and have this kind of character when you need to play like with 10 men and just know that you have to, basically, you just have to pull it off by just by any means.
Yeah.
And the players were like were in this kind of mood. And about what Sam was saying about like his headline of the piece, like being one of the best performances that City has ever done in the last 6 years. I mean, it's kind of difficult to put that like into a ranking because, of course, all the games that we have praised Pep's Manchester City. But I think that when Pep leaves, and it doesn't matter if it's next summer or if it's in 2 years, in 3 years, in 4 years, as soon as he leaves, and if he has to remember all the big games that he has played with Man City, this game is going to be among them. I could feel that kind of enthusiasm in Pep.
Yeah, and making the players go for that lap of appreciation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's going to be like the Southampton game with the Sterling, like the Bournemouth game at Bournemouth with the Sterling goal as well. It's going to be one of those games.
Yeah, well, we're going to dig into all of that, and I'm going to get more into that attitude of potentially being one of the best. Because let's start with Guardiola's immediate reaction in the post match press conference. This is how he spoke to reporters after the game.
Now, after winning at the last moment, is better, and the arguments of the manager make us stronger, but would be the same the way we play 95 minutes against 11 against 11. And after the way we played 10 against 11 against that team, that of course they miss Mitrovic a lot, this is so important for them, but we could see just one shot, we get more chances, and we played in the right tempo. 10 and 11, you know, you cannot attack so quick because they will attack quicker. And with Bernardo, Gundogan, all the three, four players in the middle was amazing. Good Rodri, Gundo, Bernardo, Kevin, especially today. When I said many times in the recent past, still is not his best. Kevin, the games in Leicester and today, it's completely the opposite. So he's a movement guy, and today he put the team in the shoulders. And of course, everyone was exceptional. 65 minutes against Fulham, played the way we played, was the moment of the my period here in Manchester by far. And of course, scored at the end, celebrating with our people was we didn't win the Premier League today, of course, but this moment makes sense our job, all of us. See the faces of our crowd when we were making the pitch run, the pitch walk, so it was really good.
It hasn't happened too often that your team get red cards in the first half, but normally when you do, you normally stay on top, stay in control, have more possession, create more chances. Why does that happen? How does that happen? What are how would you say the factors are for that?
Well, we spoke about that when the keeper has the ball, try to make even man-to-man or high, even we are one less player, so they are central defender, try to be high. I think Bernardo, Gundogan, Manu, all the people in the middle, they are so intuitive how to go in several positions, and when we are not able to take it, drop a little bit and wait, and when you feel it, then you feel it go. But especially, this can happen because we have a long possessions. We cannot attack so quick to make... with patience and wait the moment when set pieces, one action, like in the first half, we had two or three with 10 against 11 the last 15 minutes, so clear, was two goals disallowed for nothing, and wait the moment, and we were patient, tried to concede the goal. Of course, the last minutes, they had some counterattacks, but you see the bug was from John, like it's not full by how he played today, amazing, and Bernardo and Rodri and everyone. So it was so exciting, the emotion as a manager after 7 years here, you always have doubts, the people follow you, are tired, the people is annoying to all our job, all of us, many thousand millions meetings and training sessions and travels and whatever, and you see today, I said, wow, still they are there, still they want to do it, still they are alive, and that make us so, so proud.
You could tell, Sam, that he feels exactly the same way about that performance.
Yeah, absolutely. He said, didn't he, in one of those answers, kind of buried in Guardiola, not quite perfect English speak, he was like, just because we won now, everyone says, you know, it was good and the decisions were good. But even if we hadn't won, it would have been just as proud of them. And I remember I tweeted that. I was like, when it was 1-1 right near the end, I was like, they've been so good today. And I remember somebody replied saying, doesn't matter though, does it? I was like, of course it does.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
of course it does. Like, to fight and battle like that. Okay, at the end of the season, if they lose the title by 2 points, and it does matter, but to play like they did and put that effort in and to give everything that they did. And again, people might be listening to this thinking, you lot are mad. like, because didn't really create many chances in the second half. But honestly, just I guess it was just one of those where you had to be there.
Yeah, there was a line in your piece actually, Sam, that I really liked about the work ethic, where you'd said that after the last game, Guardiola had said that they were so tired they didn't get the phones out to check Instagram, and you're like, they're just not going to be online for like middle of the week after that one. They'd work that hard.
Oh, they would have been fucked. They were absolutely knackered. And that's an interesting thing actually, isn't it, for the Chelsea game and the Carabao Cup. Like, Guardiola might as well play everyone. He doesn't have to worry about, oh well, we've got Champions League next week and we got this after that. He doesn't have to worry about that. He could play whoever he wants against the Chelsea team in midweek, but like, De Bruyne is going to be knackered, surely.
Yeah.
Like, De Bruyne is going to be absolutely knackered. I'm sure a lot of them will be, but like, it reminds me of last season. Do you remember at the end of the Arsenal game, De Bruyne was just like chasing around, closing everyone down, and at the end I think like Fernandinho called to get the doctor on because De Bruyne was just absolutely knackered.
Yeah.
And it was another one of those performances at the weekend. And yeah, it's interesting for how it'll work against Chelsea. But yeah, just another line I wanted to write in the article was, you know, Bernardo Silva's best Man City performances are normally measured in kilometres. But then I emailed Opta to get how many kilometres he ran, but their contract with The Athletic doesn't cover like distance covered. So I couldn't find out how many kilometres he actually ran.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have known. Because I'm sure they would have been up there again. But he was just popping up at centre-back again, wasn't he? And bringing the ball out and winning the ball.
That's the thing with Bernardo. He just reads the game in a way that, I don't know, if he ends up leaving, I don't know which player can like be that in the world. Because Jude Bellingham is not that.
Yeah, yeah.
Jude Bellingham, if you have to make like a kind of a comparison, I think that Kevin De Bruyne probably is like the most similar thing. Not Bernardo Silva. But just the way that he reads when he has to drop a bit and play like as a center back, just when John Stones, because we can talk about John Stones again, because I'm absolutely devoted to John Stones and what he does being a center back.
Yeah.
Because he can be just anything. Of course, he's not the best player. He's not going to be Haaland. He's not going to be Phil Foden, but he understands like the positional game, in which kind of position he needs to be to make the team work, and how he has to move, when he has to be just up front, just to create the space for the other ones. He's that intelligent, and not many centre-backs in the world can do that. And it's fucking awesome, basically.
Yeah.
just about Bernardo Silva, it's just the ability just to read the game, just to know. He doesn't need like any indications from a manager. He just knows it. He just knows where he has to be, where the team needs him, if he has to be like in a center back position or as a holding midfielder or being an attacker or a winger. He's just that good.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Adam Crafton, and I'm the host of The Athletic's new documentary series, Away From Home. We've been following Ukrainian football team Shakhtar Donetsk through the Champions League group stage. They've had to play their home games in Poland following Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
The first bomb, I'll never forget.
In this series, we're going to take you inside Shakhtar. Travelling with them across Europe as they set out on their Champions League odyssey.
It's not only about football now, it's about show that we are fighting.
Are we speaking to those in Ukraine itself, hearing stories about how the war has affected them?
My wife's father, he died.
They killed him. Yeah.
Subscribe now to Away From Home to follow the whole story.
Well, let's talk about the positional play because I texted Nadim on the way home as I was driving home because I couldn't stop thinking about the game. That's how much it had kind of consumed me. I just couldn't stop thinking about the performance. So I texted him just to say like genuinely, how hard is it to win a game when you're a man down? And he phoned me and just basically was gushing about how good Stones, Akanji, Ake, Rodri, Bernardo all played it around kind of as the last line of defence because they were taking massive risks. That, like, if they lose the ball at that point, Fulham are clean through and the damage that does. I mean, Sam, we spoke last season after the Palace game how hard it is, you know, when a team is sitting in 11v11 to be able to create chances. So 10v11, if you're a goal down, it's really hard. So, like, just the bravery that they showed there to keep the ball and move Fulham, who were trying to press them, move them around the pitch and take those chances to create the space for Gundogan and De Bruyne to turn in the middle and just set City away. I spent all weekend thinking about it, Sam.
And again, that's kind of one of the more subtle elements. You know, when Guardiola was talking about they're intuitive and they need to know when to drop and when they can pass. And De Bruyne said in his mix zone, because Paul asked him, you know, they talked about, you know, you can't go full out. You got to pick your moments, but then it's harder with 10. It is that intelligence of the players. And that's the thing, isn't it? That's why it was such a good performance, because we talk about, it's more obvious to see the effort and the running and like the tenacity they had. You know, Gundogan again, just to win the second balls. De Bruyne are winning loads of second balls and winning the ball back. There was that move, wasn't there, that started on the edge of the City box where De Bruyne like flicked it around the corner, like, under pressure to Gundogan. And then they sprayed it to Foden and he had a really similar touch to De Bruyne. And then it went back to Gundogan and he chipped it to the far post, so Foden just missed it. But that was phenomenal. So the stuff like that and the effort is easy to see. And then, like you're saying, with that intelligence and that bravery, and again, like Guardiola saying, the long possessions.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not go forward and attack and take the game to them. It's being intelligent and it's being patient, and it's just so much harder than you immediately realize until you ask Guardiola, you ask De Bruyne, you speak to Nadim about it, these kind of things. Just tying all of that together. That's why it was so good. I mean, again, I'm doing that thing we normally do, where I'm signing off my points with the same questions, but with the same points, sorry. But just the way we get there is just going to be different every time, because there was just so many different bits of little elements of it that were just so good.
Yeah, and that's why, Paul, I'll be honest, that's why I would rank it as genuinely one of the best performances under Guardiola. And I'm to flip it around the other way, what I actually think is can you name a better one? Like, is there anything off the top of your head that immediately you go, they played better in this game against this opponent, and that's why it's not the best Guardiola performance?
I mean, I guess we could. I guess we could do that, because there are a lot of, like, great games. But I think that, and I'm not implying anything because I don't have anything to write about it, but if... And I don't
maybe
have
when they beat Spurs, but the goal got ruled out
in
the Champions League, because it's the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and like the game against Liverpool last season in the league was great. City was great as well.
Yes, like, both of them.
Especially at home, but what I mean is that just the words that we just heard about Pep, just seeing the squad having this desire. If, and I'm saying if, Pep decided to extend his contract, it's going to be because he has seen this place as the one that City played against Fulham, basically. Not because City won against Man United. Well, of course, it played a role. But just to see City in a random game against Fulham, which might not be the biggest game of the season, just seeing the players like that, that's what makes Pep think, okay, these guys are like for real and that might be worth it to extend my contract. Having said that, I don't have any information on new things. And as soon as I do, me and Sam are going to do any kind of piece or report or anything about it.
Yeah. But I mean, the other side of it, and it's kind of tapping into what Paul's saying there, Sam, is It's responding to kind of the bad luck moments, and whether they are genuinely bad luck or whether you have genuinely been wronged or not, you still feel it, and you still feel aggrieved, even if like the penalty decision, for instance, is the correct one, even if the red card is the correct decision, you still feel aggrieved in the moment that it's happened, and it's very easy to let your emotions run away with you in that sort of situation. So, like another element to this impressive performance is that they just responded to it. I was a little bit concerned that Bernardo was trying to get himself sent off at the end of the first half. But apart from that, like, they got in at half time, they regrouped, and they were like, right, well, if nothing's going to go for us today, we're going to have to make it go for us.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I did that little laugh a minute ago, because when we had De Bruyne in the mix only the other week, it was a week after the Liverpool game, and he was asked about, you know, referees and consistency and that. And he was like, well, and because obviously what he said after the game, because he talked about you wanted to be consistent, and he was annoyed with the refs, and he was like, well, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes after games, your emotions run high. And I went, what about during? Because like during the games, you can tell he's really pissed off as well, and he kind of laughed. He was like, yeah, during as well. But yeah, he was livid, wasn't he? So when you talk about, you know, perceived wrongdoing, that kind of shirt pull he wanted a penalty for, there was no proper replays of it. Like, I asked the people who work for the Premier League and stuff, there was no proper replays of it. It was only the cross as it went in and the Akanji header, which was saved. But it didn't seem like much of a penalty. Obviously, they were absolutely convinced of it. And yeah, probably halftime probably came at a good time, because he was raging at everyone, wasn't he? De Bruyne, raged at the ref, raged at the linesman. Halftime, he went to go to the refs on the pitch, and I think was it, and De Bruyne sent him away. And then he went to have a go at the fourth official.
Yeah.
And then Diaz, who was obviously a sub, and he was down there, he dragged him away. So yeah, halftime definitely came in a good sense there. But yeah, again, it's what Guardiola was saying earlier. They had that right kind of anger that, you know, Paul translated into what he probably meant in Spanish. And yeah, they did channel it in that right way. And again, you know, to control the emotions like that. And again, just to go back to what you were saying about the players being intuitive and, you know, not rushing it and inviting the pressure to break the press and all this kind of stuff. I tweeted when Foden and Haaland came on, I was like, this is going to be pretty chaotic now, I think. And I put "I think" because I was like, I'm not convinced it will be, actually. But I've had to guess with the way that Foden and Haaland play and, you know, going back to that Newcastle game and Guardiola says they like to go forward, I was like, it could easily get, especially with Haaland on, it could easily get more direct. But again, going to come back to the same point of it was so good, but arrive to it in a different way. They could have gone more direct to Haaland. And if this was a game at the start of the season, how many times did we talk about them looking for Haaland a bit too much with long balls?
Yeah.
And then we mentioned that last week when we were at the Etihad. They've stopped doing it now.
Yeah.
When we talk about them being patient and Foden going forward and Haaland going forward when they need more passes, could have easily descended into that. I say descended. People would have wanted to see it, but it wasn't what Guardiola wanted. So then to do all those things, to stay calm, given how annoyed they were with the ref for some moments. I think the fans were really annoyed with the ref. To be honest, I didn't think the ref was horrific. It's just one of those things where football stadiums, not just City, but anywhere, they get a bit carried away with these injustices, perceived or otherwise. But to stay calm in all those circumstances, whether it was because of the ref or because they had direct players on the pitch, again, it just goes to show how impressive it was.
Now that you were mentioning about Bernardo Silva, I mean, I wanted to go back because there's a story from the weekend that I think that you, Sam, do not know, which is that Bernardo Silva came out on the mix zone, and because you were like in the press conference and we were like asking him if he wanted to stop and talk, and he basically told us, no, I am in a rush, I have to leave. But and he made like a kind of joke that was not on the record, and of course we no one reports about it, but he said something like, but you can try to interview the referee, because there were like some nice decisions in that game, like while was having a laugh with everyone and the fans that are on the big zone right now, and all this kind of stuff. So it was a bit of like a funny moment in the mix zone, Bernardo making fun of the referee. But
He's doing a lot more this season, isn't he? He's done two already. I think he'll do more. But obviously he didn't speak to the media for ages after the whole Mendy thing. I think
he
did that one this season when, you know, it was the eve of transfer deadline day and he said, staying and this is why. But yeah, he's doing it a lot more now. And I mean,
and
we managed to speak to him the other week, and I will write an article based on that and the changes in his game at some point during the World Cup, I guess. He's another good talker. He's one of those, if you get him on the right subjects and the right questions, it'll be brilliant.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I want to go back to the controlling the emotions as well, Paul, because it's as Sam very, very neatly kind of summed up the mood inside the Etihad. And like Guardiola, he's talked about this in the past where like the other impressive element of that performance on Saturday was that City basically ignored the crowd. The number of times where they got possession of the ball, it was with, I don't know, Stones, it was with Akanji, it was with Bernardo in the centre-back positions. And the fans wanted it higher up the pitch. They wanted them to play through the thirds and attack for them because they wanted them to go and get the winning goal. And Guardiola's talked about slowing it down, knowing when to attack. De Bruyne did as well. It's the fans have the kind of emotional aspect to it. They want to see the attacking football, whereas if City do it, it opens up all sorts of risks for them in the game. I asked Guardiola about it last season, and he didn't really bite, but then he kind of spoke about it after the 1-0 win over Wolves, when City were in full control for the vast majority of the game. Wolves had 10 men, and then for the final couple of minutes, it got really frantic because they kept trying to exploit the space when actually they just needed to kill the game. And this is what Guardiola said about it at the time.
When this team said they come to wait, to try to play, but wait, and wait the right moment, you have to be patient. You cannot make mistakes. And today we didn't. At the end, because we didn't press good, we drop. We play with emotion, you know. It's last minute, 1-0, the game is over. And that's happened.
And so, like, as Sam's saying, like, again, with a different way of arriving at the same point, that they were really good. They were really good to control themselves in that environment.
Yeah. I mean, they really are. I mean, I think that what we discussed in the last podcast, like recalling that quote from Kevin De Bruyne after a Manchester derby saying, yeah, we just had a practice with a false nine to go at Old Trafford and we practiced it like 5 minutes. So they are at this stage right now, basically. They don't need to practice. They don't need to think a lot about it. They just do it. It just comes out naturally from their game. And basically, I think that they know that it plays to their strengths, and it talks really highly about City that even having like such a menace as Haaland, which is tempting, and we have discussed that about that in this podcast, which is tempting just to put long balls to him because he's going to run and he's probably going to beat the centre back. Just City didn't do it. And yeah, basically, I mean, I think that they are in the most mature stage since Pep has been here, for sure.
Yeah. Just all the way through that second half, they were like we said before, they passed it dangerously at the back. They drew Fulham out and they didn't hit it. So, I mean, Sam, why was this one... I mean, not necessarily why was this one. Was this one different to previous games where City have had a man sent off early? Because I think of Wolves in 2019 when Edison was sent off at 0-0. Or Brighton. I mean, I know they'd won the league already by the time that Cancelo was sent off at Brighton in that topsy-turvy game. But in both of those games, City seemed to go within themselves a little bit, and they just didn't do that on Saturday.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ideas initially, because two editors had this idea at half-time, and obviously it was dependent on how they went, but they were like, "What is their result quite good, and do they manage to stay on top? So are the results quite good, and do they manage to stay on top when they got 10 men?" And like instinctively, I was like, yes. And I remembered because I remember being really impressed with the Palace performance last season, even though obviously they were 1-0 down when they had the man sent off and they lost 2-0, but they were really good, I thought. And I just kind of have in my head that City do this, Guardiola does this. And I remember when he was Bayern managing. Do you remember when Bayern came to City? and they had a man sent off.
Oh, yeah, they had a man sent off and still
and
battered
they
us.
Absolutely played. They played City off the park. It was absolutely outrageous. And I remember thinking, at the time, I don't know why, because I didn't watch Bayern loads, but I remember thinking, they're still going to be better here. I put like a fiver on them to win, even with 10 men. And then they were amazing. But then Aguero scored a hat-trick in like 15 minutes, didn't he? Or like 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, so he got the last two. Like, I remember because I was in the stands going, he scored the penalty and then Bayern went 2-1 up. And I was just like, he scored with a couple of minutes left. And I was just like, right, I'll take the draw, get out of this game. against 10 men.
But that's because they were so good. And I remember seeing like a video of like a sped up Bayern passing video with like Benny Hill music. It was like Rondo's like on the pitch. It was unbelievable. But that's what I've always got in my mind about City with 10 men. But it's not the case. We got a list of all the red cards. There's some games I don't remember. But basically my point is there's too many instances and too many games when City have had red cards where there's no real thread to it, or at least not the one that I could find. It was like, well, they won this one, but they're already winning and they saw it out. Or they lost this one, like that Wolves game away, when they actually scored again, didn't they? Did they go 2-0 up or 2-1 up?
Yeah, it was nil-nil when Edison got sent off, and they went 2-up and lost.
Right, yeah, but then lost. Yeah, exactly. And then, but I think 3 out of the last 4 were similar to that, because one of them was the Villa game in lockdown. Do you remember? It was when the Super League was kicking off.
Yeah.
And they were losing, and then they equalised, and then he went down to 10 men. But then they were still on top. But then Villa went down to 10 men, and then they won. So again, you can't really put your finger on how often they do it. But I do have that sensation that it is something they can do and something they do. I think the fact that going back to that Bayern game, it shows that energy levels is still a thing. You know, you can play as well as you want, but at the end, if you get caught out, again, also, it depends on the opposition. Like Paul said earlier, Marco Silva was saying they could have been a bit braver. You know, if City had gone down to 10 men against Brighton in the same circumstances, not too much of a stretch to imagine Brighton would have been braver and won. So it's not all, you know, we talked about how amazing City were, and obviously I stand by that. I'm not going to change my mind now. But there was an element of the team's approach against them. You know, Palace last year, they carried on sitting back as well and kind of let City have that possession. But in terms of what was different now, I skipped back after the game at the weekend while I was waiting for Guardiola's press conference at that Palace game last season. And they were patient at the back to kind of lure Palace into them, like to press them, and then they were kind of direct with their passes forward. They were getting the ball up the pitch, and not in a kind of slapdash way. They had a man in space, but they would get the ball to them very quickly with long balls forward. And I don't know, but I did wonder. I thought maybe they went, yeah, given the circumstances, even though they did well and they attacked well in that game, and they did score that equaliser that was ruled out with VAR. That kind of direct play against a team who was good on the break as Palace might not have been ideal, and probably made it a bit more do or die than if they had been more patient. And now they're finally at that stage where, you know, like Paul says, they don't really need to have it drilled into them. They know that, you know, patience is the best way forward. So yeah, there is no thread to City having 10 men and what they do and what the results are. But there was a table. I think the table is in my article as well. Since Guardiola came in, I think they've had, is it 14 red cards in like, or 15 red cards in 14 games? Or
yeah, it's Premier League only, because I went through all of the games, and it's 23 red cards in 22 games in all competitions. So it's like there's only a few more in the Champions League.
It was like 6 wins, 1 draw and 7 defeats, which obviously sounds fairly average. But if you look at everyone else, I think only Arsenal had more points, but Arsenal have had kind of more red cards as well. I couldn't really work it out, but it was basically, there aren't too many teams who do better with 10 men than City, but there is no real thread to it other than, you know, a lot of it depends on how the game is anyway. And then you've obviously got the element that we saw at the weekend where they are just phenomenal, and obviously other teams will just let them keep passing it around anyway.
Yeah, the only actual score lines of those 23 red cards in 22 games, the only actual score lines that got worse were Barcelona in 2016 when Claudio Bravo caught the ball outside the area for no reason.
Yeah, that got ugly after that.
And then Crystal Palace last season when they went 2-0 down from 1-0, and that every other time the score has either stayed the same or City have turned it around. They just haven't got worse. So it's an interesting setup. Paul, let's kind of look a little bit forward for the final part of the show today. So Sam was talking about Chelsea a bit earlier on. What do you think the attitude will be towards Chelsea, given that the season effectively breaks in a couple of days after it, and then you know they've got a lot of players going off to the World Cup, but a few key players not.
I think they're going to go for a win. We might see, I don't know, Riyad Mahrez, Phil Foden, players that didn't play as starters on the weekend. But I don't see City playing like Guardiola going like in full rotation mode. I think that Haaland might have a chance to start. So I think that despite the fact that probably in terms of like a schedule and fixtures and calendar, would be wise just to lose the Carabao Cup and just forget about it. But City's, I mean, they cannot think about that when they face a game.
City and Guardiola don't do that.
I was just going to say as well, because the next round is like 3 days after the World Cup final, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Before it's on the 21st. Yeah, 21st of December. Yeah.
But I think Pep would love that. Get your players back and then you've got a game to run them in. Like, we don't know who could be late back. Like, Alvarez might not be back if Argentina go far, and Edison might not be back if Brazil go far. You know, maybe Rodri. Don't know about Portugal. Don't know about England. But like whoever they've got back, it's not going to be quite full strength. But the chance to play them all together in a game against whether they play Arsenal, whether they play Liverpool, whether they play Rotherham, I think Guardiola would absolutely love that. Before going to Leeds away, it's perfect. So you're not just, have you got them wanting to win every game and, you know, he can go as strong as he wants, because he doesn't have to worry too far down the future, because he doesn't care about international teams, because they don't care about City and they don't care about clubs, so why should he? You've got that element, and also I think he would just love to have that game. And like, if they don't have the next round of the Carabao Cup before they play Leeds, I'm sure they'll probably schedule like an extra fixture, whether it's behind closed doors or whether it's against another team somewhere, because I just think they would love to have that competitive opportunity before the Leeds game,
that little bit of a ramp to come in. I mean, it's a little bit of a sad thing though, Sam, because I was genuinely a little part of me was hoping to see Scott Carson plus 10 children. You know what I mean? Like the sort of Pellegrini at Chelsea that year, sort of.
Well, it'd be good to see. Speaking of children, it'd be good to see Rico Lewis. Yeah, like, it would still be good to see Rico Lewis. Good to see Cole Palmer, but Haaland, I wouldn't be surprised if he played. Foden, whatever the hell's going on there, Foden, I presume, will play since he's not allowed to play Premier League anymore. maybe Mahrez. Be a strong team. The only thing is, there's not many midfielders, are there? And they'll all be absolutely fucking knackered.
I think that Rico Lewis has a chance to start, doesn't he?
Mm. Yeah.
He might have. I'm just like, I don't know anything. I'm just like kind of playing a bit, but with the lack of fullbacks that City has, I mean, all the centre backs must be knackered as well. A Stones must be knackered. A Kanji must be exhausted. Ake as well.
Yeah, at least they got Diaz and Laporte. That helps.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and we cleared up the Cancelo thing as well, didn't we, Sam? Because he's not suspended on Fantasy Premier League for the Brentford game, so he must be suspended for Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine, isn't it? They'll just play Sergio Gomez.
One available fullback. It's a situation they've been in for a while now. Anyway,
so nobody could have possibly foreseen that would happen.
Yeah, just a very very final.
Oh,
final.
I'm sorry, Calvin Phillips on the bench. Guardiola
Calvin Phillips is going to be on the bench.
But he doesn't know if he'll play, but he'll be on the bench.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one.
I guess that if City can afford to make him play, he will.
Yeah.
But that's the point. I don't know if they will be able to afford it. I mean, I have to say that Chelsea looked quite bad against Arsenal.
Yeah, I did watch their game against Arsenal and think, well, obviously this side are going to come to the Etihad and win, aren't they? So
Is Sterling going to get booed?
God's plan.
I don't know.
There
might be a bit. Yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't say it'll be full stadium, but there'll definitely be some.
So final point. I just want to play this from the embargo part of Saturday's press conference after the game. This is Guardiola on what he's got at City. He was asked, do you realise what you have at City? And this is what he said.
When I'm proud of most, I said many times, after 7 years, still we can perform like we have performed so far this season. You can play good, bad, win, lose. when you lose, always I think we can do what we have to do to do better. But you see the team, no give up, and Bernardo with this, they played after the send off and some decisions that this perfect amount of certain amount of I would say the word in English, be grumpy, a big you know, energy that you need to play 10 against 11. Otherwise, they don't give up. So that's why we compete until the end.
You talk about sometimes having doubts about whether the message is still fresh to the players. Does it surprise you that your enthusiasm is still as fresh?
They make me, this is not me to them to me. It's a feedback. I give enthusiasm, but they give it to me. So with the way that I play, I was playing 91 minutes, 2 minutes. So what I was seeing during 65 minutes, you know, we are not a team like make everything up and down quick. So the enthusiasm, we have done it, and after score there and see the faces of the people, our people, they give me now energy for the future. They give it to me. So I cannot disappoint them. I have to be there with them. And before the game, they see my enthusiasm. So all the time I have to be like push. Ah, come on. No, not enough energy. Anyone has that. And today they give me what they are during 6-7 years. When the people support the team unconditionally, is because they have done it many times during many years in this league in England, in the toughest league by far all around the world. Still there. You know, after winning 4 Premier Leagues in 5 years, still there doing what they have done so far. That is the biggest prize, the biggest title we can get as a team, as a club, as a everything.
First off, there's a bit in there in the middle of that where I've got no idea what he says, but like, I can just feel what he means. The second off, Sam, again, absolutely no information, but tell me you're signing a contract without telling me you're signing a contract. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, didn't he say, though, when he talked about the future, which would be difficult, which would be a weird one to miss out given it was the audio, but didn't he say it gives me energy for the future? But he immediately mentioned Chelsea and Brentford rather than the next year, but obviously it wasn't on.
Yeah, I did tidy it up, so I may have cut that out.
I thought so, but yeah, so there is that context to it, so I don't want to put the brakes on that slightly, but yeah, exactly. Like, didn't you tweet? Yeah, you did tweet. It was like
get a contract right in front of him immediately. Yeah.
I actually thought about asking him that, like, as a joke. Like, if you got offered a contract now, would you sign it? Because as you already said, you could tell he thought it was brilliant, and everything he said about how proud he was of his players and all those different aspects of the performance. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, we'll see soon, won't we? Because if he's going to sort it out during the World Cup, then, you know, pretty soon. He knows how good he's got it, and he's obviously got, you know, Akanji's one thing, yeah, because he had the doubts about setting up having depth in defence, and they went and got Akanji for him, and he's called him a present, you know, that's how he kind of sees it. So he knows, you know, the club are kind of doing everything for him to do,
bending over backwards,
and then you see the players are doing it as well, you know, and he said, you know, it's not just me to them, it's them to me, and all this kind of thing. It's, yeah, exactly, like you say, it does kind of feel like that's how he's feeling on it, and I guess we'll see.
Yeah, the moment for me, Paul, was again, I think this taps into your both you and Guardiola's mutual love of John Stones, where he just dived on John Stones right in front of where I sit in the Etihad, and kind of like wrapped himself around Stones and made Stones carry him for a couple of yards on this lap of appreciation. And like, it's just like, you can still feel his enthusiasm. Like, it's speculation. Like you say, we've not got any information on whether he is going to sign or whether he's not going to sign. But you can't help but feel confident.
Yeah. All the signs are there, and we got the feeling that City has done everything from their side to make sure that this can happen. Not just with Haaland, but Akanji, as Sam was saying right now, the connection that Pep has with the players. Basically that, I think that the kind of refreshment that City made to the squad was kind of key just to keep the team as it is right now. And yeah, as Sam was saying, we're going to know soon, because there's just a couple of press conferences left, I think, before the World Cup. Pep is going to try to sort them out as smoothly as he can, and then out of the blue, we're going to know if he stays or not. Because I think that after the World Cup in January, everyone will know the final decision at some point, I guess.
Yeah, they'll probably make an announcement either way. But that brings us to the end of this week's Wire with Us. So thank you very much to Sam Lee.
Yeah, thank you, lads. Cheers. Enjoyed that almost as much as I enjoyed the game the first time around.
Yeah, don't have to lie to us, mate. You don't have to lie.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to Paul Bayous as well.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. You can use the code MANCITYPOD. Now, before we go, we've got a snippet from The Athletic's brand new documentary series, Away From Home, where they've been granted access all areas to Shakhtar Donetsk during their Champions League campaign, all while their normal lives have been turned upside down by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. It's a truly remarkable series, and if you like what you hear, you can listen to the first 3 episodes right now by searching for Away From Home wherever you get your podcasts. Here's a little teaser.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yeah. Of course. You can ask a question. I try to answer.
Sure. So I suppose to begin, can you explain the past couple of days, how you are, and also if your family is okay, first of all?
Yes. In the morning of 24th of the February, we walked up after the sounds of bombs. And went to basement.
This is the captain of Ukrainian football club Shakhtar Donetsk. His name is Taras Stepanenko, and he's one of the most famous footballers in his country. He was born before the collapse of the Soviet Union. He played over 70 times for Ukraine, and he's been with his club since 2010. I called him as war broke out to learn what was happening firsthand.
Multiple attacks on cities right across the country. The foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, has just tweeted that the country is under full-scale invasion by Russia.
I have a wife and 3 sons, one 7 years, one 8, and one 4.
Okay. What do you tell them?
My wife is scared so much. We started to read news, but my sons, they don't understand clearly what happened. Now, I think they're scared too.
Stepanenko's life changed, like so many other Ukrainians did, when Russia invaded the country in early 2022. But 6 months on, unlike most men his age, he's fortunate enough to do his normal job again, to play football, and to play in the Champions League, where the best teams from across the continent face off to be crowned kings of Europe. For Ukraine, football is more than a sport now. It's a unifier. It's a statement to the world that they are strong, and Shakhtar Donetsk is the embodiment of that sentiment.
We are showing to all the world that we are still alive. Nothing cannot kill us. We are in the war for 2014. It will be difficult to play, but we must play. Unfortunately, we are thinking just about Ukraine now. And if this fucking bastard from Russia think that we will stop to play because of that, we will not stop to play. We'll play, and we will win.
For The Athletic, I'm Adam Crafton. Over the course of this series, I'll be tracking Shakhtar's unique football journey as they navigate their way through football's toughest contest, all whilst there's a brutal war raging on their doorstep, forcing them out of their own country.
You didn't sleep, you cannot sleep. 3 days. 3 days without sleep.
I'm proud that I'm part of this team, of this club. And today we can be proud because this victory is for Ukrainian people, for Ukrainian citizens.
It's not only about football now, it's about to show that we are fighting, that we are still alive.
This is Away From Home, Episode 1, We Believe in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
The Athletic.